News, I'm Tommy McNeil. Ralph Northam, the governor of the state of Virginia, who declared a state of emergency in advance of a pro-gun rally that numbered in the tens of thousands, issued a statement saying that he is thankful that there were no acts of violence there. Meanwhile, the event organizers say the fact that there was no violence at an event where many carried firearms demonstrates just how responsible and restrained most of the country's legal gun owners are. VOA's Carolyn Pursuti explains.
This is an unusual sight on the streets of an American city. But in the state of Virginia, carrying a gun in public is legal. This day, thousands of armed protesters arrived in the capital city, Richmond, to remind state legislators that the U.S. Constitution protects the right to have guns.
Second Amendment right, it's a natural right.
Concerned about violence from extreme and fringe groups, Virginia Governor Ralph Northam declared a state of emergency and banned all guns from the grassy field around the Capitol, the site of the actual rally. Virginia used to be a reliably conservative state. That all changed in last November's election when Democrats won control of the state house and started passing gun control bills. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News, Richmond, Virginia.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is calling for a speedy four-day calendar for opening arguments in President Trump's impeachment trial, which begins Tuesday. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is calling for a speedy four-day calendar for opening arguments in President Trump's impeachment trial. When the Senate convenes tomorrow, it will vote on a four-page resolution outlining rules for the historic impeachment trial. It calls for 4 days of opening arguments, 2 days per side, and then senators get up to 16 hours for questions to the prosecution and defense. Then 4 hours are allotted for debate, and only then would there be a vote on whether or not to call witnesses.
AP's Jackie Quinn. This is VOA News. The number of people infected with a new strain of coronavirus in China tripled over the weekend, and it is spreading from Wuhan to other major cities. The new cases of pneumonia-like illness caused by the virus has been detected in Beijing, Shanghai, and Shenzhen. Scientists have also confirmed that the virus can be spread from human to human, which is bad news for China as it prepares for the spring holiday, which is the busiest travel season. VOA's Lattice Ahok.
Japan, Thailand, and South Korea say they have identified the virus in several patients who recently arrived from China, sparking fear of a global outbreak. Chinese President Xi Jinping has ordered measures to prevent the spread of the virus. British biomedical expert Derek Gatherer says it may be hard to provide enough testing facilities for all the people who may suspect that they have this particular virus.
We have to remember also that we're in the middle of a flu season and many people will have influenza.
U.S. health authorities have ordered screening of passengers arriving from Wuhan, China at the international airports in San Francisco, New York, and Los Angeles in an effort to reduce the virus from spreading. Zlarica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
The European Union's top diplomat, Josep Borrell, said on Monday that the EU's support for Libya would require more than a truce, but instead the stabilizing effect of a lasting ceasefire.
I want to stress once again the fact that we are not still in a ceasefire. We are in a truce, which is unstable, and, you know, a truce can be violated several times a day. Let's hope that, by the contrary, it's going to stabilize and we are going to really go to a ceasefire.
Foreign powers agreed at a summit in Berlin Sunday to shore up a shaky truce in Libya, which has been in turmoil since the fall of Muammar Gaddafi in 2011, as two rival governments in the east and west vie for power and energy resources. Addressing journalists after an EU foreign minister's meeting, Borrell said that the ceasefire would not be necessary to resume its naval mission off the Libyan coast, Operation Sophia, which he interrupted at the end of March of last year after Italy said it would no longer receive those rescued at sea. Homicides in Mexico rose to a record, increasing by 1% to 29,401 cases in 2019, the first full year of Andrés Manuel López Obrador's presidency. That's according to data published by the Security Ministry Monday. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Derek Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 21st. And here are some of the stories we are covering. The European Union considers reviving a UN arms embargo against Libya.
We are not going to change, but to refocus, especially on the issue of embargo. The arms embargo has to be controlled not only by sea, because most of the arms goes through the desert.
Josep Borrell is the European Union's top diplomat. Ugandan police arrest and release Dr. Kizza Besigye as his FDC party celebrated its 15th anniversary. The party of former Gambian President Yahya Jammeh reacts to threats to arrest him if he returns from exile. And thousands of Malawi school teachers go on a nationwide strike.
We are not sure about the promises by the government. That's why we have decided to go on a strike, so that at least a certain gear has to be taken by the government, so that this problem has to be identified this week.
Charles Kumchanga is the General Secretary of the Malawi Teachers Union. Malawi this month opened the first African drone and data Aika Academy. And Tanzania's government plans to block all mobile phone SIM cards not registered biometrically by January 20th. The stories and more coming up on Daybreak Africa. The European Union is considering restarting an operation to control migrant trafficking and enforce a UN arms embargo on Libya if a shaky truce in the North African country solidifies into a formal ceasefire. Lisa Bryant has more from Paris.
Speaking Monday after an EU foreign ministers meeting in Brussels, the bloc's top diplomat, Josep Borrell, said member states discussed revamping the operation to include monitoring a Libya arms embargo by land as well as by sea. Known as SOFIA, the mission has mostly been known for combating migrant trafficking off Libya's shores. Its maritime operation ended last March after Italy said it would no longer welcome migrants rescued at sea.
We are not going to change, but to refocus the mandate of Operation Sophia, to refocus especially on the issue of embargo. The arms embargo has to be controlled not only by sea, because most of the arms goes through the desert.
Borrell said this means also enforcing the embargo by land and air. He gave no timeline, but Italy's foreign minister said his country is interested only in the arms embargo aspect of the SOFIA operation, not the migrant component. Borrell spoke a day after foreign powers at a Berlin summit agreed to shore up a fragile truce in Libya, where two rival governments are vying for power and energy resources. Analysts say Europe is late in concentrating on the Libya crisis, waking up only now to its implications, especially with the recent involvement of Russia and Turkey in the conflict. EU foreign ministers also discussed a neighboring hotspot, the Sahel, where extremist violence is growing.
On peut dire que la Libye, c'est une sorte de tumeur.
Borrell described Libya as a tumor spreading instability across the Sahara. He said roughly 4,000 soldiers and civilians died in the Sahel region last year alone.
C'est la première fois vraiment
the EU announced no concrete measures on Monday, but French Foreign Minister Jean-Yves Le Drian applauded what he described as Europe regaining control in international affairs. France hosted a summit last week to shore up military cooperation with West Africa. African countries against growing Islamist militancy in the Sahel. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
The former president of Uganda's main opposition Forum for Democratic Change says Ugandans are resolved to exert their right to freedom of association and assembly ahead of the 2021 presidential election. Dr. Kizza Besigye says Ugandans currently have no freedom and democracy under President Yoweri Museveni's government. Ugandan police arrested Dr. Besigye on Monday as his party celebrated 15 years of its founding. He was released later in the evening. The police said the FDC had no permission to hold a public rally. Dr. Besigye says there has never been free and fair election when citizens are not allowed to assemble peacefully.
The struggle we are engaged in, James, is a struggle for democratic change, for citizens to assert their rights. That's why we cannot have free and fair elections. An election is billed to take place next year, 2021, and yet citizens cannot hold a meeting peacefully. This year, we made a resolution that we are going to assert our rights before the next elections, that our rights must be respected. And it started today with calling for celebrations of our 15 years for the Party of Forum for Democratic Change. And there were celebrations in various towns in the eastern part of our country where I was attending one such celebration. And as expected, the police interfered, came and started firing tear gas to disperse people that had assembled.
Dr. Besigye, a similar thing like what happened to you is happening to the Honorable Bobby Wine. What reasons did the police give you for your arrest?
They are totally unjustified. They say that they have not given you permission, that you have not fulfilled the various endless requirements that they put forward. Even if you fulfill them, they will simply say they were not satisfied with them and that kind of thing. Yet our constitution is very clear that as long as you are not interfering with any other people's rights, there is no reason why you cannot enjoy the full range of rights that are within our constitution.
As you mentioned, your party is celebrating its 15th anniversary. You have run for president 2 or 3 times. What lessons do you think now your party has learned as the country prepares for another election?
Well, you see, one of the misunderstandings, especially people who sit or stand on the outside, make is to think that there is actually a multi-party political dispensation, that parties function. That is not the case. What we have in Uganda is a military state. The regime was installed by the military called the National Resistance Army, which had fought the Bush War for 5 years. And we still have a military state clothed in civilian attire. So the political parties that we are organized around are not functioning political parties in the strict sense of the word, but we use the narrow space that is provided under the law to form these political parties to fight for expansion of our space, political space and rights. And that is exactly what we are doing. So there is a total state capture. This is the situation. All institutions are completely captured by the Museveni junta. And so our struggle is a struggle to break the military dictatorship and then be able to organize a transition to a more open and democratic dispensation. So we hope that once the regime is broken, and it will not be broken, frankly, through an election that it organizes under its terms, with citizens having simply no rights.
Did you ask the police for permission to have a rally?
Well, the law is very clear. We do not need the permission to hold the meeting. What we need to do is to inform the police, which is always duly done and was done in the instant case. And they acknowledged, indeed, received our communication. So there is no question of the lack of information, as we are required to do under the law.
Dr. Besigye, thank you. Always nice to speak with you.
Thank you very much, and the struggle continues.
Dr. Chisa Besigye is the former leader of Uganda's main opposition forum for democratic change. You're speaking with us from the capital, Kampala. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 21st. Daybreak Africa time, 14 minutes past the hour. About 5,000 Malawi school teachers have begun a nationwide strike to demand the government pays their December salaries. Some of the teachers had been removed from government payroll after they reportedly failed to present identification documents as part of a new government measure. The teachers have denied the claims, saying the government removed teachers from the payroll even after they had submitted their identifications.
Some teachers, about 5,000 of them, were removed from the payroll. What it means is they did not receive their salary of December 2019. The reason being was that they did not submit their national ID to the relevant authorities. So because of that, government decided to remove them from the payroll. But according to the teachers, they are claiming that they submitted the relevant documentation to the relevant authorities. So they are questioning the government why they were removed from the payroll.
Do you have proof that will show that indeed these 5,000 teachers submitted their documentation as they said?
No, in fact, we proved that because we consulted the district educational managers where these teachers were submitting their documents, and we proved that these teachers indeed submitted the documents. But apart from that, they said that even without that, these teachers resubmitted the same documents to the government before the end of December. But government, again, has failed to solve the problem up to this time.
So do you see any end in sight to this strike? And how are you engaging the government to resolve this problem so your fellow teachers could be paid?
We have been talking to the government, and government has re-promised that it is going to sort out this problem this week.
So if the government has promised you that this problem will be sorted out or resolved this week, why are you going on strike?
Yeah, we have decided to go on strike because it is not the first promise. We were promised about 3 times, if not 4 times, last week, the other week, and the other week. So we are not sure about the promises by the government. That's why we have decided to go on a strike, so that at least a certain gear has to be taken by the government, so that this problem has to be rectified this week.
When do you see the strike ending, if I may ask you?
We are just waiting for the government to pay the December salary. And once these salaries are paid to the teachers, immediately the strike will end.
So are you not even being considerate of these students who will be affected by this decision to embark on this strike?
Teachers Union of Malawi and the government, both, we must consider the students. And the government must be the first body or the people to consider the students. And indeed, we had been considering the students, and that's why we had been teaching even without money. So when we have engaged the government into the nationwide strike, it means we are a little bit tired.
Charles Kumchenga is the General Secretary of the Teachers Union of Malawi. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty from the capital, Lilongwe. The spokesman for the Gambia's Opposition Alliance for Patriotic Reorientation and Construction, the APRC party, says threats to arrest former President Yahya Jammeh when he returns to the country are politically motivated. Dudu Ja, the deputy spokesperson and secretary of the APRC, says the government seems to be unpopular and is using state institutions, including the police and the judiciary, to intimidate and harass opponents. His comments come after Justice Minister Abubakar Tambadou said the former president will be arrested if he returns from exile. Local media quotes the justice minister as saying if former President Yahya Jammeh ever comes back to his country, he will face immediate arrest and charges of the most serious kind. The opposition party has announced plans for a peaceful march to demand the return from the exile of Yahya Jammeh. Dudu Ja tells viewers Peter Clotty that the government seems baffled that the former president still has support. Ja also said his return will ensure the administration loses the next election.
I would say it's no surprise to us, hence it's the justice minister talking, and that's what we always expect from him. Saying that he will be arrested when he steps his foot in this country, that is his wishful thinking. They can go ahead to do so. But I just want to tell him that this country has a constitution, and that constitution doesn't belong to Bakambedu. If there are laws that provide that he can be arrested immediately and charged for crimes without evidence, then I think the justice minister has to give us or show us such laws that are enshrined in our constitution.
Your party has been campaigning for former President Yahya Jammeh to return to the Gambia. Aren't you going to put him in jeopardy of arrest and possibly charged for crimes against humanity and various crimes allegedly committed during his presidency when he returns to the Gambia?
Not exactly. We know what the constitution says. We know what our book says, the law of the land. So they should be in a haste to have him back, not us. We just want him to come back because that's what the Constitution guarantees. And besides, he's a citizen of this country. He has every right to come home. So they should be happy to hear that news, saying that he's coming back. But it's like they're just issuing threats, mere threats. If he steps his foot, we're going to arrest him, so that people say, okay, let's change our mind. We know what the law says. And there's nothing they can do to intimidate or threaten people. He's coming back to this country. Whatever the justice says, whatever the law says, so be it. We're not afraid of that. We know that he has a huge crowd behind him who are all Gambians who support him. Why are they so afraid for him to come back?
Are you saying the government is making empty threats and that the government is afraid that a former president will return to the Gambia?
This is the fear they have. And politically, yes, because they've seen the people supporting him. They know if he comes before election, they don't stand any chance of winning election. So this is the fear they have. So they want to campaign, and for them, they are going to win the next election. Then after that, they can allow him to come back. This is the game they are playing. It's all about politics, knowing about his popularity, influence he has on the Gambian people. If he comes back before election, there's no way they are going to win this election. And even some of these international community, they also support that. They don't want him to come back because they want this government to continue, because whatever they are looking for in this government, they are getting it.
So this threat from the justice minister, you say, is just politically motivated?
It's politically motivated. I can guarantee you that. Because they know that the Gambian people, they don't win the hearts of the Gambian people. And whenever we call people, they come out in their thousands. We pull the largest crowds in this country. That is definitely terrifying them.
Dodu Jah is the deputy spokesperson and secretary of Gambia's Opposition Alliance for Patriotic Reorientation and Construction, the APRC. He spoke with Vius Peter Clotty from the Gambian capital, Banjul. Tanzania's government plans to block all mobile phone SIM cards that are not registered biometrically by yesterday, January 20th. Officials say the move is aimed at cracking down on cybercrime. But mobile phone users complain that the deadline is too tight, and some of Tanzania's political opposition worry that blocking mobile communications could disrupt the general election schedule for October. Charles Kumbe reports from Dar es Salaam.
Large crowds of Tanzanians are lining up to register their mobile phone SIM cards before a January 20 deadline, when authorities say all unregistered cards will be blocked. The registrations are needed, say authorities, to crack down on fast rising cybercrime, which jumped by 82% in Tanzania in 2017. Among the victims, Gift Swai, who was defrauded of $1,300 when she tried to purchase electronics online via her mobile phone. After sending the money, his number was never reachable, says Gift, adding that a biometric SIM card will help a lot. She said if the system was there when she lost the money, it would have been easier to catch him. The biometric registration will link SIM cards to identification cards or foreign passports and fingerprints. Tanzania's Communication Regulatory Authority says the registration will reduce cybercrime such as mobile payment fraud. Frederick Ntobi is the head of communications.
Simu hivi sasa ni benki. Hata wakati mwingine unaweza kutuma hela kwenye.
Nowadays, phones are like banks, says Ntobi. Sometimes you might mistakenly send money to various places. Because the detail of the one who received the money will be known, he said it will be easier for your money to be returned. The strict cut-off deadline was imposed to force millions of Tanzanian mobile phone users who were slow or had missed the earlier deadlines to register. Tanzania's communication authorities say as of January 5, just over half of the country's 44 million SIM cards had been registered. But there's concern among Tanzanians that they may not be able to register in time and that their phones will be effectively cut off. Meanwhile, opposition lawmakers worry that cutting off unregistered mobile phones will be another hurdle to campaigning ahead of October elections.
Labda kwenye jimbo la Ubungo kuna wapiga kura 20,000 au 40,000.
Chadema party leader Said Kubenea says if a member of parliament in the area wants to communicate with the public, ask for a vote or to share information, and 15,000 phones are turned off, 15,000 people will be out of the system. So Kubenea said the lawmakers will be unable to communicate with them. To avoid any such problems, Tanzanian authorities are urging everyone with a SIM card to register by the January 20 deadline. Charles Kombe for VOA News, Dar es Salaam.
Malawi this month opened the first African Drone and Data Academy with support from the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF. The academy aims to improve drone technology skills across Africa, beginning with Malawi and neighboring countries. Lamek Masina reports from Lilongwe.
Karen Asawa developed an interest in drones at Uganda Flying Labs, a Kampala-based drone mapping and data hub. As a student at Malawi's just opened African Drone and Data Academy, she gets to learn how to build one.
Right now, we are learning how to assemble a drone right from the start, considering its weight, considering the center of gravity, considering the GPS and all the electronics that is involved in making the drone.
Asawa is one of 26 students from across Africa in the first 3 months course at the academy, learning to construct and pilot drones. The United Nations Children's Fund is backing the program, which this year is expected to train 150 students. UNICEF says the academy and the launch of Africa's first drone corridor in Malawi in 2016 will promote drones for development and humanitarian use. Rudolf Chivenk is the country representative for UNICEF in Malawi.
For example, transporting supplies, medical supplies to remote areas, or transporting samples very fast, you know, where unless it would take a lot of time to transport them. We have worked also on emergency preparedness and response, because with data and with drone imagery, you can see where flooding will happen.
The drone course was developed with Virginia Polytechnic Institute and State University, better known as Virginia Tech. Kevin Kokasberger is an associate professor at Virginia Tech.
We go through 3 modules in this program. They learn drone logistics, drone technologies, so they become very functional with drone, not only being pilots, but they can operate and maintain the drones as well.
The Drone Academy has inspired some students like Tumbiko Nkwawazingwe to reach for the stars.
I have a vision that I can start the first Malawian space agency here in Malawi, which we can be utilizing geoinformation data for different applications. For example, here in Malawi, we are so susceptible to flood as a geohazardous.
The African Drone and Data Academy's first graduates are expected in March. The academy plans to partner with Malawi University of Science and Technology for a free master's degree program in drone technology by 2022. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Lilongwe.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. About 5,000 Malawi school teachers have begun a nationwide strike to demand the government pays their December salaries. Some of the teachers had been removed from government payroll after they reportedly failed to present identification documents as part of a new government measure. The teachers have denied the claim, saying the government removed them from the payroll even after they had submitted their identifications. The education ministry says it is working to make sure that the teachers are paid. And the former president of Uganda's main opposition forum for democratic change says the Ugandans are resolved to exert their right to freedom of association and assembly ahead of the 2021 presidential election. And that is it for this Tuesday, January 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Barty, Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Rock and roll, America's finest export. Our culture and music of today are permanently indebted to the pioneers who trailblazed this musical tradition. Listen to Border Crossings on February 6th to hear rock's greatest musicians like Jerry Lee Lewis, Buddy Holly, and Elvis Presley, only on The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, historically black colleges and universities in the United States are expanding in Africa. HBCUs on the continent on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.